Stephen Covey, in his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, talks about beginning with the end in mind. In fact, it's habit number two. Quoting from the book, Stephen says, "Habit two is based on imagination, the ability to envision in your mind what you cannot at present see with your eyes. It is based on the principle that all things are created twice. There is a mental, first, creation, and a physical, second, creation. The physical creation follows the mental, just as a building follows a blueprint. If you don't make a conscious effort to visualize who you are and what you want in life, then you empower other people and circumstances to shape you and your life by default. It's about connecting again with your own uniqueness and then defining the personal, moral, and ethical guidelines within which you can most happily express and fulfill yourself. Begin with the end in mind means to begin each day, task, or project with a clear vision of your desired direction and destination, and then continue by flexing your proactive muscles to make things happen." This week on Not Another Business Show, we take a look at beginning with the end in mind, what this means to us as business owners, and how starting with the end in mind can be one of the best things we can bring our business.
You're listening to Not Another Business Show, inspiring entrepreneurs to think smart, not small. Brought to you by Daunted to Done, your virtual project manager. To implement and execute your business ideas, you need Daunted to Done.
The concept of beginning with the end in mind means completely different things to each of today's experts. The beauty of this principle means that we can explore all aspects of our business just by exploring this one little principle. So let's start with what our numbers man is hearing from his clients.
Some of them just want to have a hobby. They want to have a little clothing store that just will pay the bills for them, and that's fine. That's what their end in mind is. Others have a specific goal of saying, well, I want to build a business to sell in 5 years. It's actually really important to ask those questions of a client before even talking about what structure they want to put in place, because those sorts of questions really impact on what the structure is going to look like to start with. I must admit, I'm a bit of a golf fan, and I think it was Greg Norman who actually said, if you don't aim for something, you'll hit it 100% of the time. And that's exactly the same thing in business. If you don't have a goal, if you don't have the end in mind, you're just going to plod along, and you'll never reach that end goal if you don't really have that in mind from the get-go.
Our accountant uses the concept of beginning with the end in mind as a bit of a goal setting session, and to help him figure out the best kind of structure to suit your business now and into the future. We understand the value of goal setting, and I wonder whether Stephen Covey had this in mind when he developed this principle. I went on the hunt to speak with other experts to figure out how they view the concept of beginning with the end in mind.
It's certainly something that business owners need to be clear about. And I do find that that's a little bit of a struggle for some people, because they think about it in one context. They think about, well, I want my business. This is a typical thing. I want my business to generate as much of an income for me as my previous corporate job did. So I earn 150 grand a year. I want to earn 150 grand a year out of my business. You go, okay, well, that's nice. That's a good goal. But what else? What do you want it to achieve? What do you want from a satisfaction point of view? I mean, you're going to have to work hard for that 150 grand a year. You know, I mean, what is a goal for your family? What is the goal for your well-being? I think that our vision for what our business can do for us now is much more holistic and much more tied in. You talk to people like Tim Ferriss and, the Richard Bransons of the world, you know, all those big kind of names that we know, you know, they're all going to say the same thing. You know, there was a day that the business was over there and my life was over here and I had different goals. Now the goals are all intertwined and the vision is there. But I do think whatever your vision may be, and make it as well-rounded as you can, you've got to have one, because having a great vision is what gets you through the tougher times. I think that in small business in particular, we do get bogged down with what's in front of us. We do get overwhelmed at times with what's happening around us. And if you don't have a strong enough vision for where you're heading, then you just don't get there. And it's quite interesting little analogy for me, because where I live in Cairns, there's a mountain, tallest freestanding mountain in Queensland, might have been Australia, and it's 1,000 metres high, it stands alone, it's like a pyramid, it looks a little bit like the thing out of Lord of the Rings, but I see it from where I'm sitting here right now, and it's very distinctive, and it always reminds me about just how powerful it is to know where you're going, that I'm heading to this, no matter what's in the way, I'm going to get there. And we all get that, we all understand about the power of having a goal and a vision that we're heading for and all the rest of it, but I think that I think a lot of people in small business don't spend enough time really, really cementing what does that look like? What do I really want to achieve? And, you know, in terms of contribution, financially, health and well-being, my family, my industry, my community, etc. And those that do, it take the time to really get that right. They're the ones that to get nothing will stop them from getting there. So I think make stronger that vision and be more committed to it and put time frames on it. Don't say, well, I want to reach that mountain sometime in the next 25 years. I want to do this in a year and just revisit it every single day. Right, how am I going? Am I still heading in the right direction? Am I heading to where I want to be heading? And that's, I think, is very sound and just so important for any small business.
That was Australia's number one small business author, Andrew Griffith. His take on the principle of starting with the end in mind is a bit more holistic. This is something I chat about with my clients, as is my personal belief that you need to have a very clear vision of what success really looks like to you. And rarely, if ever, is it the money. For some people, it is something far deeper. Usually it's tied to something bigger, community, family or friends. For others, it could be tied to freedom. But it is important to be able to clearly articulate why you are striving to create the business that you are. And in that, what kind of business that you want. Some of us, me included, have a clear idea that we want a lifestyle business. That is, I want to only work a handful of days each week, and I want to be able to walk away from my business and take a decent break. I want to have a business that I can access anywhere in the world from my laptop. And that's the beauty of beginning with the end in mind. I have a very clear picture in my mind of following the Formula One circuit, checking in with my clients and enjoying the time to travel. But I wanted to look at this from a different angle. What about beginning with the end in mind when it comes to staff or recruiting? There is no one better to chat to on this than Richard Triggs, Managing Partner of Arete Executive Recruitment, Australia's number one executive recruitment agency.
So firstly, Stephen Covey, God bless his cotton socks, begin with the end in mind. I think that's a lovely principle to pay lip service to, but I think in reality it's very, very hard to actually do that. I mean, the world is moving at such pace. There are professions that our children will work in that haven't even been invented yet, another bit of a cliche. And I think that to think, oh, well, I'm going to make a hiring decision. I'm going to hire Tracy today because in 5 years' time, she's going to replace me as the managing partner of Arete is just rubbish. Who's to know what can happen in that intervening period? So I think you do the best you can do. Firstly, I think you've got to hire well. And following a good process like performance-based hiring enables you to do that better than you probably would otherwise. The second thing you need to do is fire fast. So definitely get an intuitive gut reaction very quickly as to whether somebody is a performer or not. My biggest mistake that I continue to make over and over is I try and give people the benefit of the doubt and to continue to invest in employees that simply aren't up for the job. They performed well at interview, but we hired them under the best of intentions. They had the best of intentions. They get into the role, they don't perform. Biggest lesson I think that I can possibly say, hire well and fire fast. If they don't look right, if they're not acting right within a short period of time, make the tough call and get rid of them. Then I think thinking about succession planning is understanding what are the drivers that are keeping somebody in your employment and keep them showing up for work every day. And I worked for a boss years ago who had a little tool that he used for that. Unfortunately, I think this guy paid it more lip service rather than actually believing it, but I thought it was actually quite a clever thing, is to say to your employee, what are the three reasons that you come to work? Why do you come to work? You know, what's your drivers? And if you don't know that explicitly about your employee, then you can't really claim to have a retention strategy or a succession planning strategy. You should know for every person in your team, why do they keep showing up here every day? It's more than just being paid a salary. They could be going and getting paid that salary at anywhere, my competitors, or leaving the industry altogether. So for each person, they may have completely different drivers. Never assume that somebody is there because of the reasons that you believe are true for them. It's important to ask that question regularly and sincerely and take action on what they say. So succession planning is a very challenging thing to do. One of the other reasons that it's challenging is that often people who are very good technically in a role get promoted into a leadership role because they see that that's the only career path available for them, but they're actually pretty crap at leadership. And the recruiting industry is a perfect example of that. Somebody's a great recruiter. They get promoted to being the manager of a team of recruiters. But being a good recruiter requires you to be pretty brutal and pretty selfish. And being a leader, a team leader, is a completely different skill set. So what you see in the recruitment industry over and over and over again, good recruiter gets promoted into a leadership role. So they stop billing and also they don't lead well. And so their team fails. And I think that happens in pretty much every industry. So in terms of succession planning, it's thinking that, okay, you have people that you want to remain in your business. You want to reward them for good work. You want them to feel that they are growing and stretching as part of their engagement with my firm. But it doesn't necessarily mean a traditional career path to doer, then manager, then general manager, then leader. It might be a completely separate thing for them, which is getting into special projects or other areas that they're really interested in, which are going to enable you to give them a great career path that will meet their needs because you've asked them what are the three reasons that you come to work, but don't necessarily compromise your business because these people perceive that the only succession planning for them is to actually go up the corporate ladder.
Well, I have to admit that wasn't what I was expecting to hear, and you'll hear more from Richard in upcoming shows, but he is nothing if not a straight shooter. So it seems, at least in recruiting great team members, that Stephen Covey's principles may not be applicable. I know back in my corporate days we were big into succession planning. Knowing that we had people in the wings ready to step up and understanding skill sets and aspirations meant that goals and gaps within the company could be filled without too much disruption. I totally get what Richard is saying, though. Especially the thought that there are professions that our kids and our grandkids will work in that haven't even been thought of yet.
One of the things I wish I learned earlier when I started working with myself and for myself was not just to start with the end in mind, but to not limit where I think this journey is going to take me. I think it's really important to have a bigger picture and realize that sometimes the best things in life and business have the serendipity effect, and they only present themselves when you're at a certain place and you have a certain level of intellectual or professional openness to extend what you've got and where you're going. One of the main problems I see again and again is people either think too small, or they think, and this will be challenging, far too big And there's no bridge either way from them to get from where they are now to that next point. I'm a big believer in breaking things down into bite-sized chunks. Identify what the next blockage is and attend to it. And then identify what the next blockage is and attend to it. But at the same time, realize the general direction in which you're wanting to go. And at the same time, don't limit yourself to thinking that you are purely going to fit into this particular square with this particular feel, with this particular client, because that's what you currently know. I always say to my colleagues, hey, everything you know, you've learnt. Nobody comes pre-packaged with understanding and insight and responsive learning. No one does. It's always because we live in a responsive environment where we take on new things, we assess them, we chew on them, we either swallow them because they're good or we spit them out. And I think it's those types of things there when we're looking at where we are going is to say, this is the direction where I want to go. This is what I believe and hold dear and fast. These are the types of people that I would like to serve, and this is the type of thing that motivates me, that interests me, that draws upon my compassionate response. And at that point, you've identified a direction rather than a box at the end of the road that you're going to put yourself in.
That was Drew Brown from Sapience Financial and Investment Services. He made a really interesting point about forward planning the types of clients that you would like to work with, or as he put it, to serve. And that's something that we haven't encountered before in talking about this principle. So we are beginning, I believe, to get a really well-rounded concept of how we could all implement this principle into our own businesses. And I love Drew's reference to everything you know you've learnt, and that none of us come as a pre-packaged basket of knowledge or understanding and insight. So when we are creating our goals and visions and beginning with our end in mind, that we should allow it to be a work in progress, to remain fluid to where it goes and not be wedded to a particular concept or direction. He then went on to make a really interesting point from a brass tacks point of view.
Your life, your family, that future, that peace of mind should never be sold into slavery to your business. For example, one of my pet concerns is that partners do not understand and spouses do not understand the sheer enormity of giving a director's guarantee. Oh, sometimes some accountants say, oh, look, this is fine. We can do this, this, and this. All you have to do is give a director's guarantee sign here, and it's glossed over. And you don't really know what really happens. My thinking is this. If you're doing something in your business that in some way implicates your life, implicates those assets that are used personally by your family, you need to keep a register of that. And if you're able to have that conversation with your spouse and your partner, fine. But if you're not, if you were to be embarrassed about that, you need to have a conversation sooner rather than later. Number one, what happens when the family car, the family four-wheel drive that takes the kids to and from school, is leased by a company and there is no insurance, and then the company has pressure and all of a sudden the repo guy comes out and takes away the business vehicle. Howbeit, it was used primarily for family use. It's now lost. At that point, there was too much of an overlap between what was a business asset and what was a family asset. And I think really that's coming down to starting with the end in mind, having a game book and realizing that, yes, there are some things in life that are business use and personal use, and there's a percentage there. By all means, be guided by your accountant and your bookkeeper in that regard. But it really comes down to an asset of you either insure your risk or you roll the dice. And it may well be that you have to roll the dice and you have nothing else. I get that. But if you're going to roll the dice, have a plan. For example, if you don't want to have insurance on your car, well, at least consider it very carefully. But if you absolutely, positively have no other option, insure it on the odd years and maybe not the even years. You need to apply thinking to what you're doing. And it really is about, is my business serving my family or my family serving the business? There has to be a separation there. On personal use items, you need to keep a ledger of what you are saying is used in the business and what level of use you may have with the family. Your accountant might say there is a percentage, but at some point, you need to have a business case to justify what you're doing. And if you really are using those cameras for business, absolutely, no problems at all. But at the end of the day, I'm saying this. If you find that you are expending energy sailing deliberately very close to the edge, that energy there, if you could put that into working better, more efficient, earning more money, is that not a better use of your time? I think there's a difference between people who are absolutely flat cash-strapped who are having a go, and there are people who are absolutely not prepared to think about the difference between what serves the family and what serves the business, because you can't serve two masters.
So that was a real piece of practical advice that, quite frankly, I wonder whether any of us would give a second thought to unless we were in a financial or insurance industry. But things like signing leases or taking commitments through our business can have real and tangible repercussions on our personal and family life. Definitely an out-of-the-box use of the beginning with the end in mind principle, but one that could save us a lot of grief down the track. And the idea of a business game book? Genius. Now it's time to go out of the box even further and take a look how beginning with the end in mind can even be applied to things like the branding of our business. It was time to call on Peter Engelhart from Creative Brew for his thoughts on beginning with the end in mind when it comes to how we want to be seen and known.
If you don't have a grand purpose, a big vision, if you're not aiming for something high, higher than you can currently jump, if you don't have a plan to get there, you're simply just going to stumble along, probably being driven by market forces, which will keep you well pinned down, reacting differently every day as opportunities potentially come up or you see gaps in the market you might be able to fill. So by sitting back, having a big goal, then a plan of how to get there, which will change as the weeks and months go by, your vision can change. But if you have one thing in mind, being driven by your purpose, suddenly makes a lot of daily choices around your business a lot easier. It's easier to say no to certain opportunities. It's easier for staff to understand that you stand for X, Y, and Z, and you have a lot better chance of a company growing into a brand with that guidance from you, that inspiration from you, rather than just opening the doors and hoping work's going to come your way. You really have to work at it and plan. So I always suggest to people, think big, think very big, keep driving there.
Interesting. So just like business planning, seems as though you can view your business branding or profile through the eyes of beginning with the end in mind. How about though if we step outside the box even further and see if we can apply this principle to things like developing a website?
Think of 6 months ahead, probably not 12 months if you were truly planning on rapid growth. But do build on a platform that allows extension and expansion. So you don't want to get locked into something, and this is where the sort of website builders that you'll find on hosting sites or Wix or Squarespace are often very limiting, is that when 6 months down the track you realise, look, we really need this extra functionality. Maybe it's some e-commerce or a jobs board or something that you just didn't see coming, or that really puts you into a slightly different industry category from what you expected to be in, which is often the case with startups, then it's nice to be able to just add that into your existing site rather than having to go back to the drawing board and engage a new person or start from scratch.
You just heard from Dallas at Influential. It's easy to see how with a bit of forethought and planning, you can apply the principle to almost any aspect of your business. And what great advice from Dallas that when you are going through your website build, to look for something at the outset that you can grow and morph with your business and not have to be completely redesigned. Imagine the amount of time and money you could save yourself just by implementing that one little tip when you get to create your site. The final expert I wanted to check in with on this topic was our very own business exit strategist, Daryl LeBroy from Business Ownership Protection Services. First of all, I wanted to know exactly what a business exit strategist is. I mean, I'm not familiar with that term.
A business exit strategist is all about ensuring that if someone has to leave a business unexpectedly or expectedly, that they maximize the value of the business that they've spent possibly a lifetime building up.
Okay, but how do you even begin to go about advising clients when you're working with them to develop an exit strategy? You know, potentially even if they're a startup business, how do you look at doing that? It's Daryl's belief that every business should be starting their business with their exit strategy.
Every business should have an exit plan the day they start their operation. And the reason I stumbled across that was because on the 11th of September 2001, my business had been in operation literally 5 months. And at 6:45 Melbourne time, the lawyer that helped set up our business came in to chair a meeting of the four owners of the business with the express purpose of, at the end of that meeting, exiting one of the founding partners of that business. And at 9:15 that night, one of the founding partners was forced to resign and exit out of the business. We'd spent 13 months prior to the setup of the business in April of 2001 planning for its setup. But in our planning, and despite getting advice from a number of people, none of it included the potential exit of a owner and how that was going to be accommodated. We spent literally the next 6 months trying to arrive at a valuation for the business to pay out this departing partner. It was a lot of stress and uncertainty. In the end, we got there, but it would have been a lot easier having an exit plan in place. Now, that, of course, covers the multi-partner, multi-owner business. But what happens if you're working in the business by yourself without any other partners? In that case, the business could be hugely dependent on you and you turning up and doing what you have to do day in, day out. Now, if you didn't do that, what would be the consequence on the continuity of the business, and more importantly, on the income that you're generating and the family who I guess you are supporting and the reliance they place on the income from the business? All of that gets affected if you had to exit suddenly. And the sudden exits are things like disability, death, illness, and so on.
I understand the importance of an exit strategy if you're in partnership or have other staff members from the start that require the business to keep on running. But so many of these businesses these days are solopreneurs. The business is just them. And in that instance, surely it's not so important to have an exit strategy.
People always have a time horizon. So people have a time horizon in terms of their retirement, even if that time horizon does change in the future. Right now, people are thinking about a certain time frame. So what we do is we ask about their time frame, and then we say to them, that time frame is fantastic. If everything works well, there aren't any surprises, and you can literally get there and do all the stuff that you're planning on doing, which is fantastic. But something comes out of left field and you are unable to get to that point, then what contingencies do you actually have in place? Generally, people tell us that they've got nothing in place, they've got their fingers crossed, they're expecting nothing untoward, but that's when they, I guess, turn their mind to looking at what safety net, what fallback position needs to be put in place just in case they can't get there.
So in that instance, beginning with the end in mind is not so much about them, but about thinking what they will do for their family or their personal life if something untoward happens. Before we wind it all up, though, I wanted to give Daryl the opportunity to offer a last piece of advice around setting up an exit strategy.
Everybody's situation is different. Everybody's needs are different. And therefore, tailoring something to that particular person's requirements is critical. And then more importantly, understanding their financial situation and looking at their priorities is also vital, because it may be great to have the world's best safety net in place, but if it's unaffordable, then it's unrealistic. So we need to marry it up to people's expense requirements, I guess, and then take it from there. So that one-on-one information education session is, we find, pretty vital for anybody we deal with.
We've now covered the principles of beginning with the end in mind from a vision or goal setting point of view, remembering to look at how and why your goals for the business impact your personal life. We've identified how the principle can affect the kind of structure that our business should look at. Also, what kind of coverage and financial protection we may choose to carry. We then went outside the box to look at how applying the principle can affect aspects of our marketing, such as branding or the creation of a website. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I hope you took away a few pearls of wisdom from our experts and found the show a good use of your time. Don't forget to download this week's checklist, applying the principle of beginning with the end in mind to your business. A big thanks to this week's experts, Robert King from Experian, Australia's number one small business author and all-round Mr. Nice Guy, Andrew Griffith, Drew Brown from Sapience Financial, Richard Triggs from Arete Executive, Peter Engelhart from Creative Brew, Dallas McMillan from Influential, and Daryl LeBroy from Business Ownership Protection Services. Most especially, though, thank you, the listener. You can find out more about our experts by visiting them on our Meet the Experts page on the Daunted to Done website. And remember, that's Daunted to, the number two, done. Until next week, make good use of your time. And remember, just because you're in small business doesn't mean you can't have a smart business.